This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and thank you very much for downloading the Scotland Outdoors podcast, which this week is this.
I'm Mark Stephen, he's Ewan McElroy.
Yeah, something a bit different today. It's different every week, but this is so exciting.
We're trying to look at various aspects of ways that we can mitigate our impact on climate change, essentially. And one of those ways, potentially, is the use of electric vehicles. Now, Grampian Transport Museum out at Afford in Aberdeenshire today are hosting an EV event, and it looks like being pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, because not only have we got big shiny cars, we're going to be interesting looking at the second-hand market, but fascinatingly, this is where it all began.
Because yes,
they've got the very first electric motor that went into, it was called an electric carriage, but it's an electric car, and it started here in Aberdeenshire. And it's mind-blowing that here we are, 100 years later, reinventing the wheel.
We're going to start off with Mike Ward, who's the curator of Grampian Transport Museum.
This is the world's first reluctance motor, electric motor. This was built in Aberdeen in 1837 by a guy called Robert Davidson, who was getting into what they then called electromagnetism. He was a product of Aberdeen University, a very clever bloke, a chemist actually. And he picked up on what Michael Faraday and one or two others were doing at the time and decided he could make electric motors that were useful. So he built this. So we've made a replica of it. And he then went on to build the world's first electric carriage, a small carriage that carried two people.
Just explain what this is to me, because essentially it looks like it's got, to me, two massive horseshoe magnets on either side. Then there is a drum, which is kind of insulated with timber. It's a brass drum. There's a drive shaft, and then there's a drive wheel at the back end.
Yeah, that's right. The big wheel at the back, which is about sort of 5 feet in diameter, that's a flywheel, obviously, to give it rotary motion. The shaft end at the front here is the drive pulley mounting point. You'd put a pulley on there. The big drum you're talking about is the commutator. That's the sort of core of the thing. That's the axle, and also where the brushes ride on to activate these massive horseshoe magnets. Yeah.
And this is the grandfather, father, great-grandfather of the modern-day electric car.
It is a true ancestor, yeah. I mean, this is where everything really started. This is a reluctance motor.
Well, what's reluctant about it? Doesn't want to go?
Yeah, no, that's
we haven't tried starting it yet.
That's what they call them. And virtually all motors now are reluctance motors, but the reluctance bit refers to the charging up of magnets sequentially, you know. So these magnets are switched on and off at exactly the right time by these carbon brushes here.
If it was the first in the world, you know, and the grandfather of all electric cars, why is Robert Davidson not better known? The fact he was in Scotland, the fact he was in Aberdeen is, it doesn't register high in people's consciousness.
That's really what fascinates us so much, yeah. If you buy any book about the electric car, there's a short paragraph at the beginning about Robert Davidson and what he did. But hitherto, his work has been largely unknown. Everybody knew he did something in Aberdeen. It was properly recorded. It was well promoted. He took a road show out of Union Street in Aberdeen, down into Edinburgh, and then down to London, and the whole thing was observed by thousands of people.
It's all very well building the motor, but it's the storage is the important bit, and that's, is that his battery there, is it?
That's another replica we've made here. Yeah, that's a faithful, full-size replica of his battery. It's made of all the right materials. You can see it's largely made of ash, which is, you know, a hardwood.
Well, can we go over a wee bit and have a look at it?
Yeah.
An odd-looking thing.
It is an odd-looking thing, yeah. It's basically a large 20-cell battery, and it uses iron and zinc plates, so the different, you know, potential difference between those two metals, and it uses a dilute sulfuric acid as an electrolyte.
So it's got these handles, you just wind
them you wind the whole case of the thing up and down.
Well, that switches the battery on and off, basically.
No, that works like that. That if you lift the plates out of the trough, it stops making electricity. Okay. If you lower the plates into the trough, it starts making electricity. So this is a battery with its own regulator as well.
Basically, the electric motor we were looking at for a start. You said it was a replica. Does it work?
It does work, yeah. It does work. And you get...
How do you do it?
Well, there's a big...
He's painting his way at the front.
big Frankenstein switch
there.
Yeah.
So, stick your finger in that. Go on.
See if it goes, yeah.
Ooh.
There was a
look at that.
Wow. Oh,
sparks as well.
Look at that.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It is a Frankenstein proper noise, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's far from efficient. That's for sure. The amount of horsepower this can generate, if it was running on the right voltage, and it would go a lot faster. But the amount of horsepower it can generate will now be generated by an electric motor you can hold in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
Wow, it's just so exciting. It's a thing of great beauty with all that wood, all that brass, that flashes of fire.
Yeah. What is it that's actually sparking? Why does it spark like that?
This is the commutator, which is switching the current on and off. Mm-hmm. And the current is trying to continue going all the time, you know. And it's very destructive, because you can see, you know, it's arcing and sparking, and it burns the commutator and things. And Davidson, in his day, constantly commented on that. You know, he constantly was looking for a way to reduce that, because the brush mechanism here was constantly being burnt out.
But as primitive as it is, as crude as it is, this is the precursor of everything that's sitting outside at the moment.
Everything.
And he built the first, if you go round a bit,
because
he built the first electric vehicle, really, didn't he? In Aberdeen.
Well, he built a small electric carriage, which he demonstrated in Aberdeen and in Edinburgh and in London, that was capable of carrying two people. And that was the world's first electric car. He then went on to build the world's first electric railway locomotive, which he did in 1842, which he christened Galvani, which was run on the then new and actually incomplete Glasgow to Edinburgh railway line.
He's such a groundbreaker.
Yeah.
You almost feel guilty at not knowing much about him.
Well, that's exactly what we feel, yeah. It's a real shame. He's a real unsung hero in Aberdeen. You know, other places throughout the world sort of know about Davidson and celebrate Davidson, but here on our, you know, on the doorstep, it's hardly known. Yeah, it's a shame.
This was the first, but it also developed into this thing of great beauty.
Can we go into this?
Yeah, please, yeah.
Despite a minute, he's leaped in already. I thought I would just ask. This is one of the Cruden Bay trams, and it's beautiful.
Yes, this is a very early electric tram car, yes. One of two that were made to service the Cruden Bay Hotel. It's what they call a clerestory tram. It has this extra story in the top for light and things.
It seems odd that all this technology that's around the turn of the century, it feels really modern. It almost got hijacked by the internal combustion engine.
Well, you're absolutely right.
There was a logic for this to progress and miss out the car engine altogether.
That very nearly happened. That very nearly happened. You know, we had the horse-drawn era, horse travel, mail and stagecoach period, and then suddenly the internal combustion engine and the electric car appeared on the scene pretty much the same time. The electric car was vastly superior to the internal combustion engine car. And if Henry Ford had persisted with making an electric vehicle instead of this famous Model T Ford, we might actually have missed out the motoring era. We could well have done. The only thing they couldn't do was drive like 500 miles, you know. So you had to keep charging the batteries up, which is a problem we're only just getting over just now.
Oh. Hi, I'm Pete Donaldson, and this is a Renault Zoe 41 kilowatt hour battery, which should do about 180 miles between charges. Now this is the bit I like doing, is that when you drive an electric car, if you go on grass, there's no noise.
So why did you buy this? Were you buying it with a view to climate change, with a view to economy, or just embracing the future?
Embracing the future, that's me. I always have liked the future, I'm in my mid-70s now, and I wanted to get something while I was still young enough to be able to understand the bloody instruction manual.
Honesty is the best policy.
Absolutely. Here we go.
It's a nice-looking wee car. It's not a big car by any manner of means, Pete.
No, it's but, not. No, it's
yeah,
not.
Was it expensive?
Well, this cost me £12,400.
See, that seems quite cheap. That was a, what, a two-year-old car?
No, 6 months old.
Wow.
It was a demonstrator. I was prepared to buy a new one, but when I went online, I found that quite a lot of the initial cars that were produced by Renault for their demonstration purposes, they were selling them off after 6 months.
Okay.
Because there must always be the worry if you do that, that you're going to be left behind in the technology.
Yes.
You know, it's moving so fast, when do you leap on the bus?
That's precisely right. I mean, I when I was a kid, I wanted a computer, and computers were very, very expensive in those days. And then I bought a thing called a Sinclair ZX81, which suddenly was a computer that you could actually do something with. And this was my ZX81 moment, because up until then, I saw the first version of this, which would do about 80 miles, not enough. Uh-huh. And then they came out with this, which will do 180 miles, and that's usable.
How about thinking about running costs?
Running costs, compared to my last car, this cost me $1,600 a year less to run.
And, you know, have you any idea what it costs per mile, for example, to actually run something like this?
Well, the electricity, if you buy your electricity at home, costs about 4p a mile, maybe not no more than that.
Because it's free electricity at the moment, essentially.
I charge it here in the car park here, and that's free.
Yeah. If you've got what you need, a little. We found this out when we were doing the North Coast 500 and an i3. You got a little card.
That's right.
Was it something like £20 a year?
£20 a year. Yeah. That's all.
So are you happy with the technology at the moment, or do you get electric vehicle envy? Look at the range that that one does.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a normal sort of guy. I'd like to have a Tesla Model S that will do 300 miles at 70 miles an hour. That'd be good. But they're £96,000, which is a bit out of my range. So, yeah, that sort of thing. But it's going to come down. We've got some books in the library here in the museum, 1913. And in there, the chap says, the smell of the petrol on the road is awful. If everybody had electric cars,
and
he's 1913, and he's saying the only difficulty is, guess what, the battery.
Do you get a sense of, it's almost a philosophical thing, if in 1930s we hadn't gone down the internal combustion route, we possibly might not have the same issues with climate change. Correct. Obviously, there's industrialisation, but a huge chunk of carbon taken out of the system.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I'm not into that kind of stuff at all. There's people who say, oh, we're saving the world and all that stuff. No, I'm not into that. If you look at what a volcano does, it makes what we do seem like a Vickers Tea Party. And the funny thing is that, in fact, the more volcanoes that explode, the cooler the air comes. On Earth, because it actually reflects the radiation.
You say you're not into it, but you're not doing any harm.
No, I'm not doing any harm. I'll tell you what I am doing, though, is stopping the pollution. If you go into the middle of Aberdeen in the rush hour or something, God, it stinks. And it's not very good for you, all those fumes. Yeah. I mean, having said that, I'm a bit of a hypocrite, because our other car is a petrol-driven car. But my wife and I fight over who drives this one.
I like this one. I like it a lot. When you do long journeys, do you do it in this?
Yes.
How do you do that? I mean, because you haven't got the range to hit Glasgow, really.
Well, funny enough, you have actually.
Just.
Yeah, just. And I can certainly make Edinburgh and no bothers at all. Uh-huh. We went down to Oxford last year for a wedding, so we took this down, went down to Edinburgh, had lunch while we refuelled there, then drove on down to Newcastle and spent the night in Newcastle. I'm getting too old to drive 600 miles in a oneer. I can't do it anymore. So there we are. Newcastle to Rotherham, lunch, and then on to... So that was easy.
Come for you shot?
Yeah, sure.
So you driving?
I got there first. God damn it!
You do realise he's absolutely no ability to retain instruction.
How hard can it be? It's not in the slightest bit hard. It's as easy as it comes.
And that's we're moving.
As simple as that.
Right. Yeah. Well, go around again and floor the throttle.
And just when you get this through it.
Okay. Wow! That that's really nippy.
Yeah, there's just there's no lag really, is it? It's now, instantaneous
pickup. Now take your foot off and brake. See that little thing there? That's recharging the battery.
Just off the braking?
Yeah, okay. Just off the braking.
Didn't realise it would be as nippy as that. And we have a really good indicator how fast it is, because Mark's knuckles got really white.
Yeah, my knuckles are always white when you're driving. Look at that, up to... Because it's not a long straight here at the Transport Museum, and that was comfortably up to 45 miles an hour.
Well, if this is the future, I'm up for it. Convinced?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like this.
Here we go.
So my name is Chris Ramsey from Plug-in Adventures, and this is my 30 kilowatt Nissan Leaf electric car that I drove all the way from Aberdeen to Goodwood Racing Circuit and then decided to go to Mongolia and drive all the way back again.
This thing's only got a range of what, about 100, 110 miles?
Yeah, so
How'd you get to Mongolia then? Slowly.
Yeah, it's the event I entered, it was actually a rally I entered, the Mongol Rally. And so the idea behind it is it's not a race, it is an adventure. So you're supposed to either break down or have slow issues. So when you get there and to your end destination, you've had this massive adventure and journey along the way. So driving 110 miles, I had to stop every 110 miles, charge the car, but I got to meet some amazing people.
That was the point. How long does it take to charge a car?
So I can charge this car if I have a charge point, a rapid charging point, in about 20 minutes. On the rally, I was relying on a 2-pin plug. So that is the slowest way to charge a car. So it took me between 12 to 14 hours to charge.
So what do? You knock on somebody's door or drop a cable at the hotel window?
All of the above, to be honest with you.
Use your wife as a decoy.
We charged, yeah, we dropped an extension cable through a third floor window in Russia and charged the car across the car park. We've charged from an electricity pylon in the middle of the Siberian forest.
In a pylon?
An electricity pylon. That was done by the Russian energy company, not me.
Yeah, I don't condone that,
by the way. Big crocodile clips.
But you name it, we've charged this car that way. But that shows the flexibility. I mean, all you need is access to electricity. Yeah. Some of the other teams on the Mongol Rally, by the way, they were traveling through countries where petrol was only available on the black market. Wow. When I said to them, how are you going to get petrol? They were like, oh yeah, how are we going to get petrol? And I'm like, I'll be fine, because they've all got electricity.
We actually spoke to you before we left, yeah. And part of the challenge was to prove it can be done, yeah. And to say electric cars are here. Do you think you achieved that?
Definitely. I mean, I know I've changed a lot of perceptions, and one of the big things we achieved with the rally was while we were in Kazakhstan, most of these people hadn't seen an electric car before. We crossed their entire length of their country, about 3,500 miles. We met so many people along the way. We met governments. We actually met the UN Environmental Agency. And while we were there, the CEO of one of the petrol companies, he was like, wow, this is the future of my business. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and install electric charge points. Now what he's done is he started installing electric charge points in Kazakhstan. And I received messages from people there going, we've got another charger. Are you coming back? So they're building a charging network there just because of our trip.
This is a kind of awkward question.
Yeah.
Where do you see the future for the electric car, apart from better batteries, longer range?
Yeah. I think the future for me really is it is going to overtake the combustion car. It's going to take, we know it's going to take a long time. It's not going to be an overnight change, but it will become our method of transport. And I've joked with people before saying, we're going to be having this conversation maybe 15, 20 or 30 years time where people go, no, I don't want this new technology. I'm not buying that car. I'm happy with my electric car. And it's just going to be the whole mindset change for people. But it definitely is going to take over from combustion. Definitely.
I have to say, this is probably the electric vehicle I was waiting for.
Yeah, we did the wee Clio, which is a lovely thing. It's a thing of great beauty, great acceleration. But then this big red shiny thing came round. Inevitably, everybody's eyes go, ooh, look at that. Because it's a thing of beauty, isn't it?
This is the Model S Tesla, Steve.
It is, yeah. S100D.
Okay. Tell me about it.
So this is my second one. I'm into my fourth year of them now. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love it. This one, 100D, the D stands for dual motor. Uh-huh. So it's four-wheel drive, basically. The 100 is the 100 kilowatt battery. So that gives me 350-ish miles of range.
Well, I'm going to leave you with Mark in a minute. How much does it cost?
So Model S
is always a bad start.
It's that in breath was quite telling, I thought. But
Model S's start from about 77 and go up to probably about 100. Model 3's are 37-ish, I think. And a Model X is maybe 85 upwards, somewhere about there.
So this is basically the top end?
No, this is pretty much base model.
Is it practical?
I absolutely love it. My last car, I had it 3 years, did 48,000 miles on it. Mm-hmm. Don't even think about charging, I just get in and go.
Yeah.
You know, so it's great.
Okay. So you may not make it back.
There's that. See ya. That's the first thing that crossed my mind when I came into this thing for a start, is that. I mean, I have never been in a car with a display screen that big before. It's the size of a small television.
Yeah, well, the theory with Teslas is they give you a big iPad-like screen and very little in the way of buttons.
Okay.
And that means they can update cars and add buttons if they need more facilities. So all your settings and things are all done from here.
Yeah.
If they need to add, you know, extra functionality, they could just download a software update to the car and all of a sudden you've got more stuff.
And how does that happen, the download?
You just come into the car or the app on your phone bleeps and says you've got you've got an update.
And so it actually comes off your phone.
Well, it tells you on the phone.
Uh-huh.
And I mean,
oh wow, okay, right, fair enough. I got out of the way. Yeah, sorry, I was just nearly landed in the back seat. Why did you want one of these things for a start? Because I mean, let's face it, if you're spending this kind of money, you're not worried about fuel costs,
right? So I basically needed a new car, and this is a company car to me, so the incentives for having it as a company car are very good. The very low tax rates for benefit in kind in Scotland at the moment, although it's likely to change, but at the moment the public charges are mostly free.
Yeah.
Although it's a lot of money up front, if it's leased, it's no more expensive than a Range Rover, which is obviously also an expensive car, but you know, it's no worse than that. But the running costs are next to nothing.
Yeah. No, I just find it absolutely intriguing. How long does this thing take to charge?
Well, there are quite a range of chargers types available. So at the slowest end, it would be just plugging in at my house, and probably after an average day, it would take maybe 5-6 hours to go back up to 90%. But on a Tesla supercharger, basically, it would take maybe 40 minutes or so to get from, say, 10% to 80 or 90, you know, enough to go again, basically.
But if you went to one of the public ones round about here, what is the etiquette? I mean, if you know it's going to take you 25 minutes, do you come back exactly 25 minutes later, or do you sit in the car? What do you do?
Well, so on the slower chargers, it's expected you're going to be there a while, so people aren't too fussy about you coming back immediately. On the faster chargers, the car tells your phone that it's nearing the time, so you would, the expected etiquette would be that once your car's finished, you go and get it and move and let somebody else in. Do you want to do a quick not to 60 good.
Yeah, go on. We have to. It's in the rules.
So this is a slow one.
Okay, right? This is a slow car.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah! Straight into the back of the seat.
And that's 50.
That's 50. Ouch. That actually hurts.
And this is the slow one.
Aye.
The fast ones are unbelievable. You feel the fluid in your face going back. Right.
That's cleared the sinuses nicely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, the very, very impressive performance, but again, it comes back to this business of cost. You know, if we're all going to get off petrol, you know, internal combustion engines, petrol or diesel engines and things like that, they're going to have to be a lot cheaper and the range is going to have to be bigger.
Yeah, well, they're coming down. I mean, this here, this white car here is a Model 3, which is Tesla's newer one. So it starts about 36 or something.
Yeah.
So bear in mind, okay, 36 grand up front's a lot of money, but no fuel, very little in the way of servicing, no brakes, because you don't use your brakes hardly. Pretty good on tyres if they're four-wheel
drive. Explain that. How does it stop if it doesn't have brakes?
Well, so as you slow down, the motor changes from powering the car to reversing the charging charge and it. Powering the battery.
Okay.
And laws of physics say that takes energy. You'll see here on the display, as soon as I release, that's the car slowing down itself. I'm not touching the brakes.
Okay.
So it's only literally the last 5 miles an hour that you need to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So you just feather your throttle as you're coming up to roundabouts and things, and the car slows itself down, and that charges the battery again. So if you're up the top of a hill and you come back down, your range will actually go up.
We were talking again about something else, that this business of when do you jump onto the merry-go-round, because, you know, the technology is advancing so fast, things are changing so quickly. You think, well, yes, if I buy today, but what, I'd be better if I bought in 6 months or a year. What would be your advice on that?
I would say, at the moment, with electric cars, and especially with Teslas, there is no good time to buy other than now, really, because you wait 6 months, something will change. There's no good or bad point to jump in. You just have to jump in, basically. The technology is moving so quickly that, you know, you may as well go for it now.
Greetings, poor person.
How was that?
It's fairly shift.
It looks like a beautiful thing, though.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing. Do you want a shot?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I thought I was. Right. Thank you so much.
No
I'll
problem.
Leave you to it. You'll be here for hours. Tell me what this is we're heading up into.
This is a new gallery we've built upstairs here, and it's called Probing the Future, and we're taking a look at the electric vehicle and its close relative, the autonomous vehicle, which is coming up hard on the heels of the electric vehicle. And we're posing some pretty controversial questions here, some very topical questions, trying to get people to think about the adoption of the electric vehicle. When are people going to be driving electric vehicles like all of us? And then we're asking people when they think the autonomous vehicle, the driverless car, will really, really start being seen everywhere. And it's really very interesting.
I spend a lot of my life on the road. And to be honest, I spend quite a lot of time probably too moaning about having to drive. But I would rather drive than sit in an autonomous vehicle. How about you?
Yeah, well, I you know, the jury's out on that. The autonomous cars they're making now are pretty sophisticated, you know, and they're completely safe.
Are they going to be more efficient in terms of climate change? Are they going to be better for the environment?
Well, electric cars, definitely, yeah. Autonomous cars will be a lot safer and cheaper. You know, it's driven by economics, really. You know, there is the whole environment issue as well. But actually, at the moment, it's being driven by hard economics.
Let's head out of this, because we've accidentally triggered by wondering about four different audiovisual feeds, and it's bedlam. This takes us back into the relative calm of the rest of it.
Where do you see the future going, immediate future?
It's now. 2025, most of us will be driving an electric car. That's not long away, you know, and that's been accepted. And governments have set various targets, and sort of zero emission zones are springing up everywhere, which means you've really got to have an electric car if you want to do a door-to-door journey. So electric car is a given. Autonomous cars is more difficult to predict, you know. Technology is all there, safe. You know, the technology is done. It's just that at the moment it's not actually legal.
You're surrounded by gorgeous vintage and classic cars.
Mm.
The vast majority are internal combustion engines. But potentially in the future, in terms of climate change, vehicles like the ones we're surrounded by could well be banned.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. There will be a period, we think, where they'll be frowned upon. You know, if you're driving around in a big old V8, people will say, "Well, look at that guy. What does he think he's doing?" You know, and we'll all feel really self-conscious and stop driving them. Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. And then eventually there'll be a ban. And already we have low emission zones in towns and cities. That will go to zero emissions, which means you can't drive them in certain areas. And if you can't complete a journey in a car, then it's just really, there's no point, is there?
This is bad news.
Bad news for you.
I think it is. You know, I think it change always, you know, always has casualties, doesn't it? You know, and it's for lots of people, you know, it's the end of a big hobby, perhaps. I don't know.
Do you think so? Things like the Nissan Leaf or the pioneers of modern electric cars, are they going to become classics?
I think in a way they already are. Absolutely, yeah.
We've both tried several cars. We've looked right at the very early history of electric motors generally. You know, the fact that, you know, battery technology was a concern back in 1913, and here we are over 100 years later, and it's still a concern, and range is still a concern, etc. What's your reaction to all this?
I just, you know, the overwhelming reaction is it feels quite normal.
Yes.
And it feels like this is probably the future in 15 years' time, because we have lots of different ones. We have expensive ones, big shiny ones, we've got second-hand ones, which I found was quite fascinating. Mm-hmm. And a look to the future, that it's only going to get more efficient. It will become the norm. Second-hand thing's interesting because that will develop.
Yes.
A whole new second-hand market, whereas we've talked about it many times, the cost of it is prohibitive. But as they come down, there'll be a chain of second-hand cars, so they will become accessible.
Yeah. No, it's intriguing, and I think it's quite clever of Grampian Transport Museum to actually host something like this, just to introduce it to the public. You know, they are, this place is all about transport. This potentially is the future of personal transportation.
There's so many millions of cars in the world. If you stop that emissions, if you stop the buses, if you stop the taxis polluting, it's certainly in our city centres. Mm-hmm. It might not have an effect on climate change, mm-hmm. but you could have a really clean city centre. How good would that be?
As ever, be interested to hear your views on this. You can email us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk, or you can text us on 80295. Any comments at all, just let us know.
Anyway, join us for another edition of the Scotland Outdoors podcast, which will be going out at midday on Saturday, from all the team here at BBC Aberdeen. Thanks for downloading us.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.